politically incorrect.
Correct.
This is Politically Incorrect with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson on TNT Radio.
I'm Richard Carson, and I'm here to introduce a very special guest today, Dr. Philip Altman. Now, Philip Altman is a well-known Australian authority on clinical trials and regulatory affairs, with more than 40 years of experience in designing, managing, and reporting of clinical trials with the Australian Therapeutic Goods Association. Now, I've just had 2.5 years, in my opinion, of chaos. So, unfortunately, Dr. Altman has been going around and investigating an enormous amount of what he sees as things that have gone wrong with the reporting system used in Australia. So we've got an awful lot to cover. So if I can just cross to Dr. Philip Altman and start you off, sir, on the arguments that the adverse drug reaction reporting system used in this country is broken, and why and how you have investigated and collected all the facts and figures that would certainly prove that we haven't got a good system at all, and perhaps what are we going to start doing about fixing it up. So, Dr. Altman, welcome to Politically Incorrect this afternoon.
Thank you, Richard. Sure. So let me just start off by saying there's absolutely no doubt that the adverse drug reaction reporting system, which we use in this country, and every country has their own systems, right? Europe has a system, the US has a system, the UK has a system.
Right.
In fact, in the US, there's probably 20 systems. The military has a system and so forth. Our system is called DAEN, the Drug Adverse Event Notification System. And it's a general adverse event reporting system. So the general idea here is that once a drug goes through, in terms of a classical drug, say, goes through 8 or 10 years of development and 20 or 30 different clinical trials and so forth over a long period of time, and billions of dollars are invested. If they get approval, and the chances of getting of bringing a drug from early research right through to approval are really very, very low. Most drugs fall down because of lack of safety and or efficacy, right?
Yeah.
So once a drug is approved, provided it struggles through that system, your last line of defense, and let me just go back. During this 8 or 10 years, a drug company may only have studied a couple thousand patients, maybe 5,000. I've been in different files where fewer than that have been studied, and many more. But say 5,000 patients. If you have a adverse event that's fairly rare, say occurs 1 in 1,000 or so, you might not realize the link between the drug and the adverse effect, and it still might be approved. So there's this safety mechanism, and it's the adverse drug reaction reporting system, the DAEN system that we have, which is your last line of defense.
Yep.
Now, in the case of the COVID-19 vaccines, these weren't developed over 8 or 10 years. They were developed in a rush over a period of about 10 months. And they represented really brave new world, blue sky technology that was never used before.
Mm.
So we didn't know what to expect. when you develop a new drug, most new drugs are variations on a theme, right?
Yep.
So you generally know what to expect with a drug that lowers blood pressure. You know what to look for, or a drug that is an anti-cancer drug or something like that. But with these, no one knew. They were completely new drugs, a new generation of drugs, and furthermore, they were going to be used worldwide, not only in a small group of sick people, but on healthy people.
That's the first travesty in the whole process, but please go on.
Yeah, so basically, we rushed through that process, right, in 10 months, and everyone was very hopeful, and we were promised a lot of things in the beginning.
Correct.
Just about none of the things that we were told in the very beginning have come to fruition. The amount of misinformation has been incredible. The main bit of misinformation was that these things were safe, quote, safe, unquote.
Correct.
And we were told that by the chief health officers of this country, even though these drugs did not go through the normal approval process for a new drug. They were provisionally approved, which means there was very little safety data upon which to base a claim of safety. And those chief health officers should never have been saying that these things were safe. Well, here we are, 1.5 years down the track, and we are relying on the DAEN system, the Adverse Drug Reaction Reporting System in Australia, to support the claim that these drugs are safe, right?
Yep.
Now, what I'm saying to you is that there is no doubt that the system of adverse drug reporting in this country, and I can only speak about this country because that's the data that I've looked at.
Yep.
But I wouldn't be surprised if the same thing was happening elsewhere in other adverse drug reporting systems. But let me just say that if I go to the DAEN website, and everyone can do this, everyone that's listening now can go and search the tga.gov.au, and you can go to the DAEN website, and you can pull up a report. It comes up every couple of weeks. It's updated every couple of weeks. And let me just read off to you what they say right now about the safety of these COVID-19 vaccines. They say two things. Quote, 13 reports where the cause of death was linked to vaccination from 900 reports received and reviewed, unquote. They're not saying that the COVID-19 vaccines caused the deaths. They use a very cute word. They use linked. Now, I don't use that word. I've never used the word linked in adverse drug reaction reporting. I'm not sure what they mean by linked, and probably they want to be a bit vague. But the second statement that they make is, there have been no deaths in children, adolescents, or younger adults determined to be linked, that word again, to COVID-19 vaccination, unquote. Now, that's obviously wrong. Now, I can go through why I say that that's wrong. Basically, if you look at the adverse event reporting around the world, the level of adverse events and deaths linked to these COVID-19 vaccines is unprecedented. It is astronomical. Mm. It is way out of proportion to what you'd see with any other vaccine.
Yeah, I know. We'll go through a whole lot of your work and numbers and everything else here, because at every turn, anecdotal comments and people I'm aware of, they're, you know, people close to them, like an uncle or something or other, has had a vaccine and a booster and then dies of a heart attack days later. I'm aware of, you know, I'm one person. I'm aware of quite a few incidences to this degree that I've heard about. I know when they were vaccinating those people in New South Wales early in the piece, some young people died after being, I shouldn't use the word vaccinated, I'd rather call injected, because I think the use of the word vaccination in this whole sorry event has muddied the waters absolutely, because you're just pointing out they can't get it approved or safety orientation around it inside about 8 to 10 years, and this was 10 or 12 months, and it's rubbish.
Look, your words ring true. I can tell you from my own experience, I have a number of friends who have called me up and said, Phil, I need to tell you that I know of a friend of mine who was fit and healthy, no comorbidities, in their 30s or 40s, and they suddenly died of a heart attack or a stroke. And there were six of them. Sorry, there were five of them. I knew of one case myself. So I personally know of six very suspicious deaths where there was no reason for a person to die.
Correct. Yeah.
I went to a bowling club and spoke to a group of people, and I met a doctor who pulled me aside, and I said that I knew six deaths, and he said, that's interesting, Phil, because I know six as well. So between this doctor and myself, we know as many suspicious deaths as the TGA are claiming.
And it's sad that this charade continues at the expense and the jeopardy of the health of the whole nation. It's the criminality behind the whole thing is preposterous.
Yes, I've never really seen anything like this in my life. I've been a big pharma guy my whole life. I've worked for more than half the drug companies, the multinationals in Australia at one time or the other. I've seen a lot of things, but I've never seen anything like this.
Now, the very fact that, you know, you've researched this whole project over so many different parts and sort of pulled it apart and whatever else, and that, you know, we touched on the threat posed by the SARS-CoV-2, and when you look into the numbers, I looked one of your numbers up, I think it was 99.995% of children and young people recover from the COVID if they get it. They recover.
That's exactly right. And even that 0.005% is in doubt. Because I've never seen evidence, conclusive evidence, that a child has actually died due to COVID. Now, children go to hospital all the time. They get seriously ill all the time. They have leukemias. They die in hospital. We know that Omicron is really, really infectious, right? So it's odds on that someone that goes to hospital, they're tested and they're positive and they die of leukemia or something like that. They're put down as a COVID death.
And that's just so wrong. You know, it's blatant lying, and it's everywhere.
It is.
Mike, you've rejoined the program, I think.
You can rejoin.
We've got found our other co-host.
Dr. Altman, it's Mike Tennessee here. I'm sorry, I missed the start. It was an internet connection. I'm in a place called Orange in New South Wales in Australia, and obviously some of the internet connections aren't as fast. as they are in other places, where my dear friend Richard is at the moment. I'm not sure where you are at the moment, but I hope you can hear me. I've been listening intently. I might say, Richard, just while I've got a moment, that I was looking so much forward to this because I have a lot of friends who I left a day or so ago in a place called Thredbo. We were all skiing together, snow skiing, and they're very interested in the program.
Well, I
want to shout out to them, and let's get back to the real nitty-gritty of what Dr. Altman has to say. I may have a question or two.
Well, I'm sure he's more than capable of answering them, Mike, but we were just touching on the lack of deaths in the young people, and yet we currently have a whole host of urges wanting young people, and I'm astounded that they're talking from the age of 5 months forward, Dr. Altman. Is that a lunacy? Is there something wrong with people to want to do this?
Yeah, well, it's just quite incredible because when you administer any drug, and no drug is safe, no one should be saying that any drug is safe. All drugs have side effects and have risks. When a prescriber prescribes a drug to a patient, they consciously or unconsciously should be adding up in their minds risks and benefits, right?
Yep.
The risk to young children of COVID-19 is somewhere between virtually nil and zero.
Yes, it's not much. Dr. Altman, I think we've just got to pop off for a break for a moment. So if we can give you a couple of minutes and we'll be right back.
You should hear what Shannon Joy is talking about.
Libs of TikTok. I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with this Twitter account, millions of followers. It is a young woman, anonymous, out of the United States of America. She simply goes on to TikTok, which is a social media app aimed at children. She simply video records what they're doing on TikTok and then plays it on Twitter. And the outrage ensues. This is a licensed counselor and sex therapist now advocating for what she calls MAPS, M-A-P. Remember this terminology. It is the normalization of pedophilia. It is the normalization of sex between adults and minors, some as young as 6 months old, which we revealed on my radio program with absolutely disturbing, demonic audio about 6 months ago. A professor out of Fredonia, New York, again, about 1 hour from where I live, normalizing and talking about the appropriateness of sex between adults and babies as a matter of academic theory, trying to normalize that. We are dealing with some seriously wicked, evil, and I think demonic-inspired activity.
Shannon Joy on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
A lot of people may not agree with us right now, but there may come a time when they actually have an issue that affects them, that they don't have the freedom to choose. And if we don't preserve it, we won't have it.
You have to see this for yourself.
We begin this new week with an extraordinary moment in our history. 18 days into this truck convoy, and the federal government invoked a security measure that goes beyond anything seen in this country in the last 50 years.
Banks will be told to freeze the accounts of anyone helping finance the protests. And the owners of vehicles jamming streets will be directly targeted.
Trucking for Freedom, Chapter 1, How We Got Here. Visit truckingforfreedom.com.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
We're talking today with Dr. Philip Altman about the, well, like, for want of a word, the deception around the COVID-19 fiasco. So Dr. Altman, just before we went off to that rather discombobulated break, we were discussing the lack of danger to the younger cohort of people around the world and the insistence of our medical fraternity for everyone to start injecting young people and getting them boosted and God knows what else. I'm at a complete loss for words as to why they would want to do it. But I also noted something that you were talking about is the risk of infection in children. And I think it was something like less than 0.18 of a percent in a period between, that's deaths, I should say, between the period of January 21 to October 2021. Was that a worldwide or just an Australian number? What was that scenario?
I believe that was worldwide.
Worldwide.
But even that figure, you really can't rely on that because the Australian government and other governments declare, they actually tell you up front that they do not distinguish between people dying with COVID and from COVID, due to COVID. Now, that's a real failing. If you can't produce the numbers on the people dying due to COVID, how can you determine the risk? It's impossible. Now, you can determine if people die of COVID. You can do autopsies and so forth. But they really like this nebulous term. They want to bump up the numbers of people dying with or from COVID, and they don't make that distinction. It's a problem.
Yeah, and the very fact that they're sort of being very coy about how whether people have died with it or from it, I don't know. I think early in the piece they were mistreating people that did have serious symptoms by using those, whatever they are, nebulizers. What do they call those things?
You can have inhaled steroids, yes, but the main reason why the U.S. had such a poor outcome for treating its patients, much worse outcome per million people in hospital or so,
right, yep,
was remdesivir. That was a big mistake.
Can you explain that one to the layperson like me, please?
Well, remdesivir is an antiviral, but it's a very nasty drug.
Right.
And even the drugs that they're advocating here, which the government here bought, for example, $400 million worth of molnupiravir from Merck. Now, molnupiravir is an old failed drug. It's probably 20 years old. It's a mutagenic drug. I've written about this. I've published on this. And the government has bought $400 million worth based on a single, fairly small clinical trial. Now, they have said that ivermectin shouldn't be used. And yet there's probably 80 clinical trials on ivermectin. If you stand back and look at them all, it's undoubtedly effective.
Well, the state of Uttar Pradesh in India might have put the skids under that stupidity very quickly when they were having casualties and they used wide use of ivermectin, I think it was, and they stopped having any.
Look, I've written to the National COVID Clinical Evidence Task Force. I put a submission in to them. I brought that to their attention. They didn't even reply. Didn't even reply. I then put a second submission in after a couple months. I had Tess Lowry, the lady who's probably the most famous Cochrane reviewer in the world, wrote a special supplementary report to supplement my report. I wrote again to the National COVID Clinical Evidence Task Force, and guess what?
Nothing.
No reply. Zip.
who's in charge of that body that you wrote to?
you can't find an email. You can't find a phone number. The chairman is recently changed, but it really doesn't matter. They just don't want to know.
Yeah, well,
when you say that, say, it's Mike here, Dr. Altman. Who are they? Who are they?
Who's on the National COVID Clinical Evidence Task Force?
Yeah.
It's been a while since I looked at their names, but I can tell you that the people on these various task forces, the vaccine advisory groups and so forth, most, if not all, have some conflict of interest. It might be direct, it might be indirect, it might be related to their career advancement, it might be related to grants, it might be related to research funds. It can be all sorts of things, but this is the basic problem that you have. And this goes to really something very important. And I believe this is why our adverse drug reaction reporting system has failed. It has crashed. It is completely broken. And without that system, we have no safety net, and Australians are at risk. Now, who decides within the DAEN system if a vaccine caused a death? Those names are secret. Who are those people? What are their qualifications? What criteria are they using to evaluate each case? Because there's 900 deaths. Now, if 900 deaths have been reported, there's probably at least 40 times that number of deaths, maybe 100 times that number of deaths that have actually occurred. And when you stand back and you analyze certainly the VAERS database in the US, which is a much bigger database, and this has been done, you can analyze the time of death in relation to when the vaccine was administered. And you will find that more than half the deaths occurred within about 48 hours, or the symptoms that led up to death occurred within 48 hours. That is incredibly strong temporal evidence of a cause and effect relationship that is well known in pharmacology, in pharmaceutics, in the industry. That is very powerful information, especially if you're starting off with a person who has no comorbidities and they die. Now, obviously, there's a background rate of death. People get hit by buses, planes crash, they get killed on a street corner. That happens. But the rate of deaths that have occurred within 48 hours of COVID-19 vaccinations is incredible. And yet the TGA see this. They know about it. I'm not the only one that knows about this. They know about it. I've been in this industry so long where a single report of an adverse effect, for example, in pregnancy, of a suspected deformity, can lead to the suspension of a drug, a single report.
I think that's a very important point, Dr. Altman, because they have been red hot on many, many other issues instantly. But on this one, it's been an open book of destroying people. That, you know, historically, anything that was seen to be dangerous was stepped on and stopped. Not happening now. We're too busy, I'm going to say, raking in the money somewhere.
Yep.
Something's wrong.
And it's even worse than that.
Mm.
The people like Senator Rennick,
yep,
Senator Roberts, Senator Antic, some others who have stood up, Craig Kelly, who have stood up in Parliament and tried to ask questions on behalf of Australian people to keep them safe with their heart in the right place, and they've been smeared and demonized.
Correct.
And it's...
But there's nobody else in the Parliament if you're able to answer the question, is there? There's nobody in the Parliament itself who'd be able to properly answer that question.
Well, they raise these questions in Senate estimates. I do listen to Senate estimates when these topics do come up. I personally get the feeling that the TGA is really good at obfuscation. That's, they're not wishing to get to the bottom of these questions and answer sincerely and help out and try and find the truth.
Can I look at it from another perspective, Dr. Altman? I mean, are there any statistics, figures, evidence, or otherwise of what results there are from people who are vaccinated preventing a death which might have otherwise occurred caused by contracting a virus such as COVID-19 or one of the very or the many variants of COVID-19?
Look,
is there any evidence? Is there any way of showing that a vaccine does what it is said to do, and that is be a preventative of a death being caused by contracting a virus?
Right. You're talking about prospective trials. There aren't any, right?
Yes.
Let me just give you one example of the lack of clinical trial data. See, there's been a lot said about these vaccines keep you out of hospital and keep you from dying, especially if you're an older person with comorbidities. If you look now at the statistics, certainly in Australia and elsewhere, the vast majority of people who are in hospital are fully vaxxed and or boosted, right?
Mm.
And there's lots of statistics that you can produce to show that these vaccines do more harm than good. Right. But let me just reflect on, for example, the initial study of Pfizer that was produced, that produced the claim that our health authorities said the Pfizer vaccine was 95% effective. They didn't say what it was 95% effective at. They didn't say it was 95% effective at keeping you at a hospital or keeping you from dying. Or whatever, they were quite vague.
How can it be 95% effective if it's not effective at something?
Well, okay. So what they did was, and I can't recall the exact numbers of the total number of patients that were involved, but they had a placebo arm of about 20,000 and an active arm of about 20,000 for the Pfizer trial. And that what they did was they followed these patients, and they then looked at who developed symptoms of COVID-19. Now, those symptoms could be as mild as a common cold, a sore throat, a runny nose, a cough. It wasn't going to hospital or even dying, it was who developed mild symptoms. And in the end, they had, guess how many patients to determine the 95% efficacy?
Oh, probably 50.
No, wrong.
Oh.
There were 16 in the placebo group and 3 in the active group. That's where they got their efficacy numbers from. And If you don't know your way around clinical trials, you wouldn't ask the right questions, right? But the TGA knew this. They evaluated that data. It was based on proxy immunochemistry. It was the production of antibodies, which was used as a surrogate for efficacy. Now, for a blue sky drug, Brave New World drug, basing your efficacy on a surrogate, I've never seen this done. So there were a lot of very novel things that occurred in the development of these drugs.
Look, when you're talking about serious adverse effects, I think you're aware of Dr. Jessica Rose.
Of course,
yes. And her, I think she was onto this 18 months ago, and I'm almost sure that it was a period after the injections began, the adverse effects which had been bubbling along at a very low level amongst not only of all sorts of injections or vaccinations or whatever. It was very, very small. But soon as the COVID injection started, I think I would be aware of this, it went off the Richter scale. Can you talk about Jessica Rose and your findings in that area?
Sure. Jessica Rose, Dr. Rose from Canada, has been one of the best researchers into this data. She's spent a lot of time in delving into the VAERS database in particular. She is the first one that reported this relationship between the time of injection of the so-called vaccines, and they're really not vaccines, of course, because they don't prevent infection, between the time of injection and the time of death. She was the one that first did that analysis, and I actually use a couple of her slides in some of my presentations that I make in various places.
Right.
So she was very, very good. And I can tell you that these adverse drug reaction reporting systems really can be massaged and corrupted very easily, depending on the definitions that you use and the criteria that you use to assess each one. There is a main point that I want to make, a bottom line, which is really, really super important. And it is basically this, that the adverse drug reporting systems around the world, an RDAEN system, is usually our last line of defense for conventional drugs. It's even more important in the case of COVID-19 vaccines, because the usual safety tests, the usual animal tests weren't done, the usual detailed clinical tests, safety tests weren't done. So we're reliant on our adverse drug reaction reporting system to pick up whether or not these drugs are
fit for purpose.
Fit for purpose. Now, we all know that that system has failed. Okay. So the first point is that system must be fixed, and it must be fixed immediately. Now, if it is not fixed, that to me means we have to suspend or trash completely the provisional approval system, which was introduced in 2018. Because if our last line of defense, the DAEN system, is not working correctly, we have exposure. We are all not safe. And to let drugs skate through the provisional approval system and to have a defective DAEN adverse drug reaction reporting system just doesn't make any sense.
Dr. Altman, you just mentioned that this provisional system, now was that brought to the public's knowledge when it was introduced in 2018? I'd say not.
Yeah, well, look, I know the person who designed the system, right?
Good, thank you.
So it's a new system. And really, it was a good idea. If it's used in good faith by people who have their heart in the right place and who are upfront and honest and are doing things for the right reasons, I think it's a great system, because for decades, You know, if you're working in big pharma and you're staring at, say, an anti-cancer drug that in small numbers of patients, 200-300 patients, shows remarkable ability to save lives, and yet you have to wait 7 or 8 years for that drug to be approved, it's frustrating.
Okay, that makes a bit of sense. So while we're making sense, we'll pop off for another break, if you can bear with us for another couple of minutes, and then we'll be right back.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
A Gore effect warning. This is a warning, is in effect, because of the media, misinformation media. They're not telling you about how much rain the Colorado River Basin has had this monsoonal season and how much more is coming. It may be the wettest four-month period on record in the so-called desert Southwest, which looks more like the swampy Southwest. But wait, there's more. Texas has been in a hot, dry summer. There is a drought in Texas right now. Not as bad as the 1950s, and for the United States, not as bad as the 1930s. But a monster reversal is coming. In fact, what we're telling our clients is Texas is going to go from dust to mud and floods, especially up across the northern part of the state. Do you think you'd hear any of that from the media, misinformation media? Of course not. This is WeatherBell.com meteorologist Joey Bastardi for TNT Radio, reminding you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
We're back on. Richard Carson.
How are you, Richard?
I'm still here, Mike, so I'll let you. You probably have a few other questions you'd like to pose to Dr. Altman. We were finishing on.
I'm sure there are many questions. I'm a bit upset because of what's occurred in terms of my internet connection. So it's been very difficult to try and on this tin can on the end of the string.
That's okay.
But in any event, Doctor, I noticed that, and you may have crossed this, but I wanted to just be sure about, you provided some expert reports in relation to the Australian and New Zealand Judicial Review and some high court cases in relation to the vaccines. Is that what you were talking about when you were saying that you were getting nowhere in the sense that nobody responded to you?
No, those were legal cases, right? They're both still sort of ongoing. They're very complicated cases. I'm talking about the general receptivity of the bureaucrats in Australia. When you write to them, do they interact in a meaningful way with myself or with senators and so forth?
They've got no idea, have they? None at all.
But
where did the expert reports you made for these cases, whether they're ongoing or not, what was the purpose of that effectively?
Right. Well,
was that to show up the contrary argument to what other people were saying?
Yes. Well, the government in Australia and the government in New Zealand have a view that these vaccines, the risk benefit is favorable. And they've based that decision on flawed data and sketchy data. Because I've been reading about this for a year and a half and studying this problem and this group of therapeutics, I thought I could contribute. So I started to get in touch with people, and I wrote affidavits for both cases. Now, the report that I've issued just recently, dated the 9th of August, which has been disseminated, which has been sent to all health practitioners in Australia and all politicians, that report is basically a collection of all the data from my affidavits, including the high court cases, even family court cases, and vaccine mandate type cases. So it is a single document that just presents the information in a fairly comprehensive way, fully referenced, right? Because most doctors don't even know this information. Now, the reason why they don't know the information is, I think in many cases, they just don't want to know. They're caught between a rock and a hard place. Their health regulator has instructed them to act in a certain way and to follow a narrative.
Are they frightened to be delisted by AFRA or something along those? That's their problem. Yeah, they've got to be braver than that.
Of course. And they think at the moment that they are protected from any litigation, from damages, because APRA have instructed them to act in a certain way. That may or may not be correct. And there might be something coming out next week which would cause them to have some pause there. I don't want to...
Well, don't preempt what you know there, but...
Preempt it.
Yeah, no, I've asked a lot of people that I know who've had at least two injections, and when you ask them what they were told prior to getting them, the answer is nothing.
Exactly. Your health practitioner, his or her first obligation, professional duty, is to get informed consent.
Mm.
And informed consent cannot involve coercion, and it must be informed consent. You just can't say a TAGI or the TGA say this is safe.
Mm.
It has to be informed consent. So that's part of the reason why my report was sent to every state and federal politician in the country, as well as
How many responses did you get?
We don't expect a response. It doesn't actually work that way.
But isn't that appalling, Dr. Altman, that they don't even respond or acknowledge that you've gone to the trouble of giving them all of this researched information?
No.
It's just disgraceful.
No. And I'm not waiting on a Christmas card this year.
Won't get one. I'll send you one.
Thank you.
Via Australia Post, you might get it in the next century. Look, we can laugh about this, but it's chronically, it's just so serious, it's not funny.
It is. And people are dying every day.
You're not laughing, though. Well, that'd be
right.
I'm
not laughing. The reason I asked Dr. Altman that question was, what I think is that politicians, I mean, there's a difference, as you know, between a politician and a parliamentarian, a true parliamentarian, but they don't seem to care about anything. They do not actually take the trouble to be courteous and acknowledge the receipt of a submission. Now, it doesn't matter whether they agree with it or not. The fact is that someone in their office surely can spell enough words to be able to write back to somebody like Dr. Altman.
Well, that'd be nice to think so. That'd be wonderful to think, but I have to say, in the last 2.5 years, with my very minor interreaction with any of the political class that we have, you might get a little bit of civility for a couple of moments, and then they won't even acknowledge that you're at the end of the phone or you've sent them an email. It's just blank. And this appears to be, and I was just reading something here that was in today's Australian, a gentleman has made some interesting commentary, and it's the unavoidable consequences of this with legacy and social media help to marginalise and silence all dissenting voices. It's a total program of outright silence and obfuscation, which is a word Dr. Altman used not long ago, so that we, the public, know nothing, and we have to trust people who are absolutely hell-bent on causing harm, from what I can see.
What my next question is, Richard, is to Dr. Altman, is what can you do about it? What can you actually do about this complete non-responsiveness of people who you go to the trouble to send your submissions to and get no reaction to it? What can you do about it?
Right. Well, I'm here right now speaking to you and the audience. I turn up every other week down in the local park, and I speak with 30 people that show up to update them on what's happening. I've just come back from Brisbane. I've been speaking with Senator Roberts and other doctors. That will be on Rumble early next week. I issued my report. I'm doing everything that I can. But it's all about communication. That's why TNT is so important. And I really appreciate the opportunity to appear on TNT to try and spread the truth and try and inform people about what's going on. Because eventually, this whole thing is going to collapse because the body count is piling up and the damage that's being done is really very serious.
Dr. Altman, I'm a small voice in the wilderness as well, but I certainly implore my family. I've got grandchildren. Under no circumstances take any more. Most of them have had two jabs, unfortunately. I'm not talking the children, and I'm imploring them: do not touch any more of this rubbish. Would I be right in pleading with people to do that?
And there's more coming, provided we have a broken adverse drug reaction reporting system and the provisional approval system is still in play. They're going to skate through a number of vaccines based on very thin, dubious safety data. This isn't the last time this is going to happen. This something needs to be done to really examine the system. And it's the ADR system that really has to be fixed.
And how do we start that process? Is there
we're starting it now. I mean, I'm speaking to as many people as I can, and hopefully the pressure will build.
Do you get any positive reaction from people who are sort of a bit uncertain of the whole process? Are they inclined to say, "Why didn't know any of that?"
Yeah, right. Well, look, you can usually tell. I can usually tell within 15 to 20 seconds if I'm speaking to someone, how open they are to information. They're more than half, a majority of people have very closed minds for various reasons. And there's very little point in me trying to convince them of the information because they just don't believe you because they simply say, well, why would the TGA lie to you? Why would your government lie to you? Why would a chief health officer lie to you? And that's the beginning and end of their frame of reference. But there are people that see their friends being injured, perhaps someone's died, they're curious and they start to ask questions. So I do turn around a number of people. And so it is important to keep plugging away. But you have to have an open mind and you have to have some degree of intelligence to want to look in the right places to get this information because the censorship is absolutely amazing. It's everywhere.
Yeah, that's the very sad part is the censorship. And then we've got a gentleman up here, a Dr. Norman Swan on the ABC.
Yeah.
With all the knowledge that's out there of the danger of this injection, absolutely carpeting people to get boosters and God knows what else. We're at the end of the time, so we'll probably have to wrap it up, Dr. Alton, but I would sincerely thank you for A, what you're doing, and B, coming on and having a chat to us this afternoon. And we would welcome you back at any time if you want to come and do a bit more of it. I think we can't tell the world enough and often enough.